How many thousand dollars?
As we start the meeting off, I'll call Mr. Benson Wright from Department of Revenue to come forward. Mr. Jerry Reinwald from Finance Staff to come forward to have a table. Initially, we'll have a brief summarization and briefing in reference to projected revenues.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there's been a cooperative effort ongoing with members of the Finance Committee and the staff to determine revenues available for appropriation fiscal year 83 and 84. We've given each member of the Finance Committee four separate pieces of information. One is a letter, should be right, one is a letter from Senator Bennett to Governor Sheffield asking for revenues available for appropriation based on two assumptions. One, that the remaining unsatisfied portion of the $1.8 billion appropriation deferment fund has been repealed. That's, again, only for purposes of discussion. And the second portion of it assumed that current statutory programs would stay in place. The Commissioner Heath responded in a letter, which is the second piece of information in your packet, responded to that request. And Mr. Wright will talk in detail about the revenue picture, so I won't touch on that. The third letter is a letter from Senator Bennett to the Attorney General, and this focuses on earnings of the permanent fund. As you know, basically now the earnings of the permanent fund go in three different places. One is to an account in the general fund, which is the permanent fund dividend account. Another account in the permanent fund itself, which is called the undistributed earnings account. And the remainder goes for inflation proofing back to the permanent fund. The question that Senator Bennett posed to the Attorney General was several-fold, but the key question being, is an appropriation required for so-called inflation proofing? And the last document is the Attorney General's response, and his basic answer there is no. There's also a question as to whether an appropriation is required to fund the permanent fund dividend program itself. The Attorney General's opinion is that probably does require an appropriation in the past. I know that at least the Hammond administration's letter of policy, we had the permanent fund dividends were appropriated by the legislature. So that relates to the areas of the permanent fund, which is a big piece of the revenue picture that Mr. Wright will talk about later on. Incidentally, the inflation proofing, if I understand the figures right, are really rather interesting. For FY83, inflation proofing amounts to $221 million, and for 84, $252 million. And neither one of those amounts is appropriated by the legislature as the law is not written. It's at least that per the Attorney General. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Wright.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the Finance Committee, I'll go through this letter of March 17, 1983 from Commissioner Heath. If you look at Table 1, which is the third page over, you'll see that our bottom line there, insofar as total funds available for FY84, is $3,065,000,000. Now, that bottom line figure includes our revenue forecast that's published in the January source book of $2,804,000,000. That's a 30% case. We have maintained in the past, we still do, that we should stick with that conservative posture because prudence dictates it in view of the volatility of the current oil market situation. That figure also includes the amount of permanent fund monies that you can appropriate. Now, what is excluded is, of course, the inflationary aspect. Now, there was a figure one time that was thrown out by the OMB office asserting that $404 million in permanent fund earnings was available. Now, I don't know if you recall that number or not, but that assumed that current permanent fund legislation was to be repealed. I'm taking the approach here right now that everything is based on existing law. So if that is the case, there's $178 million approximately that would be available from permanent fund earnings. The rest would go for inflationary purposes. Okay, now in addition to this $3,065.8, there are other accounts that you can tap into. And these other accounts I've itemized separately on the last page. They are not included in this $3,065.8. These other accounts refer to those monies in the permanent fund. First of all, there's the permanent fund dividend account. That money is an account within the general fund itself, but it's still sitting there. It has never been tapped into. The $442 million appropriation of a year or so ago was, of course, taken from the general fund. Then there's what they call a so-called permanent fund undistributable account. And that money, according to the Attorney General's opinion, can also be appropriated by yourself. And then there is the interest that is calculated on the permanent fund undistributable account. And that amount, as you can see, is $22 million. Now, in the permanent fund legislation passed last year, I believe it's chapter 81, there is some transition language to the effect that part of the undistributable monies will be transferred in FY83 to the general fund. So if we take a look at that permanent fund figure there in the undistributable account, $226.9 million, automatically $100 million of that is going to go to the general fund anyway this year. So what we have in addition to this as well is the rainy day account of approximately $300 million. So you've got three basic funds here that you can tap into. The first amounts to $3,065,000,000. The second is roughly $458 million from permanent fund monies. And remember, $100 million of that is going to go to the general fund anyway. And the third is approximately $300 million from the rainy day account. Now, those are the funds that are available for appropriation.
Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify one point, on Table 2, the permanent fund undistributed account includes the money that by law would go into inflation proofing. Is that right?
Well, by law, if there is not enough to meet inflation proofing of the permanent fund in any one year, you can draw down this undistributable account. In the first few years, there is no need to draw that account down because there is enough to cover for inflation proofing purposes.
I see. So this is left over after inflation proofing.
That's correct.
Okay.
Senator Sackett.
Just for the committee's information, three different things that I would point out on what the gentleman for revenue is saying. On the initial funds for appropriation list that we had at the beginning of the session, the balance for appropriation in 6/30/82, while they have 7/34, we had indicated that that included the permanent fund undistributed at 305.1 for a negative balance of 428.9. The second area that we may have some changes coming in within a week would be under FY83 operations. You had that second one called FY83 estimated revenues. The $3,567.7 is at the 50th percentile, and based upon the changes that were made last week in the OPEC pricing of oil, the department at this point in time does not know whether or not that's going to be changed or not. The FY 84 appropriations revenue forecasts are at the 30%. The FY 83 are at the 50%. In talking to the Department of Revenue the last couple of days, they indicate that they won't know exactly until next Friday. They'll have an exact figure on that. So that figure may change. The other thing I might point out is in the under the FY 84 operations, you have the FY 83 supplementals, and they have a negative there of 385.0. And just talking to the gentleman a few minutes ago, that indicates the capital supplemental plus evidently some supplementals introduced by the legislature. At this point in time, I don't think the legislature or the governor knows exactly what that number is. I just want to point it out that that could change significantly. At one point in time, we had it at 153.1. The governor initially had it at 40 million in supplementals, and that's one that's quite susceptible to change, too. I want to point out, though, as Senator Bennett has done, is that under any one of these scenarios, whichever one you take at this point in time, in terms of general dollar amounts available, there are sufficient funds to fund a supplemental capital budget. And even as we go through the different scenario and refine it this coming week, as we get more refined figures from revenue and from O&B on their expenditures, it appears that we'll have sufficient funds to have an operating budget, a certain amount of supplementals, and it does tie in. We're not too far off. The only concern I do have is the FY 83 revenue forecast that you do have, and whether or not that's going to be changed significantly within the next week.
Mr. Chairman, one other point. In the FY 84 budget, the governor has dedicated $80 million for salary increases, FY 84 supplementals, and new legislation. I can just tell you from experience, new legislation tends to grow. In fact, it averaged about, I did some quick counts, about $45 million a year in the last 4 years. And those numbers include money that's built into the budget. I mean, that's money that just keeps coming in. So, and salary increases, I recall, about $40 million. So that may be a bit tight, but other than that.
Thank you. Is there any questions by any senators? Members of the House have any questions? Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman. I believe the figures that Senator Sackett read off are very useful. It'd be good to have them in some kind of a summary, maybe several columns simply comparing what we've been going through. So
we're trying to put that together, and the problem I'm having is trying to get the information from O&B and revenue, and they are aware of that we need that. They're trying to get us estimates by Monday.
Thank you.
And copies of these letters or what have you made available to anyone who wants them. Not going through. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. That concludes the briefing portion of it. At this time, the Senate Finance Committee will take up Senate Bill 162 and act as a supplemental appropriation capital projects. We'll pass out two different machine runs, and I would ask that a motion be made to adopt these two as a committee substitute, so Senate Bill 162, and with that it would be the intent to leave them with each of the members overnight, and tomorrow morning we'll come in and readdress. We'll give some time both for the analysts to finish and type up the completed bill, as well as we'll give the senators a chance to look at everything. Senator Sackett?
I'll move for adoption of Finance Committee substitute for discussion purposes.
Okay, we have a reproduction problem out here with the finance with a copy machine. We'll take a recess for 10 minutes and the rest of the copies will be available.
Jesus, can't even read that.
What is this? The rule of meeting back to order.
Did you have any turn?
All the committee members have copies of those. Just go ahead. What the subject of objections, what I would like to do is to leave these copies with the members overnight. And the analyst will be preparing the bill and running it by the legal people. And by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll have a clean copy to look at. I would ask that the senators, the committee members have any amendments or deletions or technical corrections if they seem necessary. We'll take it up tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Do you want those amendments to your staff tonight so it can be run in the clean copy?
8 o'clock tomorrow morning. If it'll live, then we'll handle it at that time. Have anything further, Senator Ferguson?
Just a clarification of by what, which bill is which?
Those are both they'll be run together. They are both the same, 162, Senate Bill 162. It'll be Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 162. Nothing further to come before the committee? 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thank you. Call the meeting to order. We have before us a committee substitute for Senate Bill 162, an act making supplemental appropriation capital projects, 1983. Is there any member of the legislature that's here to testify on this bill? Is there any member of the public that's here to testify on this bill? Senator Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to propose some amendments, not changing dollar amounts, but changing the project. This for Senator Sackett, that he is included, Inc. was included in the governor's proposal in Senator Sackett's allocation. So on page 12, line 12, I'd like to add between lines 12 and 13, Sigla. 45,000 fire hall.
Could you repeat that, sir?
I'd like to add Casigla, $45,000 for fire hall. Max, do you know if that's delete the E for 45,000?
It didn't appear twice, so E should remain. In. Because he should be out just because it was in the governor's thing last night.
All in favor of the motion? Unanimous. I would also ask that all senators who make motions, should they carry, to submit them in writing to our clerks so that they can keep track of this. It's quite cumbersome. Senator Ferguson?
If I may continue. On page 13, line 23, this is my own district, and this is for my allocation, I'd like to change Ambler Bridge for $275,000 to delete that, and also delete the page 14, line 5, Norbert Runway Lights for $325,000, and insert between line 6 and 7, ED 22 North Slope, Cotsview, Selwick Agricultural Project for $600,000. That does not change the amount.
Motion before the committee. All in favor? Motion carried.
On page 6.
Excuse me, $625,000?
$600,000.
Thank you.
On page 6, lines 18, 19, and 20. To change from the Department of Environmental Conservation to a municipal grant, which the bill should have included in the first place.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Okay, page 6, line 18, 19, 20, that's for the Cotsview projects,
right,
and the Two Gnome project. Instead of having the funds go through the Department of Environmental Conservation, make them municipal grants.
Just changing the municipal grant. Motion for the committee, all in favor? Motion carried.
Page 5, line 12. Delete airport improvements. Page, insert in page 14, between lines 6 and 9. The same amount of dollars, erosion control and the road bridge construction. That totals 1.3 million.
Coming in that last part.
Okay. The delete airport improvements and insert in its place erosion control and road bridge construction.
Motion before the committee? All in favor? Carried.
Page 4, line 16. Dalton Highway resurfacing and culverts and insert in its place Barrow Community Recreation Complex for the same amount of dollars. I've got some backup on that.
Could you read that motion again, please, sir? Page 4, line 16.
Page 4, line 16.
Isn't it 19?
Well, my lines are just right cut out there.
But it is the Dalton Highway Research.
Yeah.
Okay, that's 19.
Okay. And insert in page 12 between line 5 and 6, Barrow Community Recreation Complex.
Oh.
Anyway, we had the $7 million appropriated for the Dalton Highway, and approximately $6 million is spent on that amount of money. We also provided $25 million in funds that haven't been expended, and the department can use that money anyways it pleases. The last run that we got from the department was on January 13th, and it showed that no money from the $25 had been expended for any projects.
Motion before the committee. All in favor? 4-1. Carried.
On page 6, line 16, the Eagle River Chugach Water for 1.850. Delete Eagle River Chugach Water and add in its place. On page 13, line 11, under maintenance and repair, Anchorage Municipal Road Improvements, change from $3 million to $4,850,000.
Motion before the committee. All in favor? Motion carries.
I have no further amendments.
Senator Victor Fisher?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to preface my very minor amendment with two comments. First of all, I keep hearing in the radio and seeing in the media references to the governor throwing in the towel on the capital budget and agreeing to the one-third. I would like to say that in reviewing the governor's proposed budget, the initial one he submitted, and what we're doing now, that we're essentially on the same track. And I think that is because the governor and the legislature are setting similar criteria and using the same orders of priority. And I don't think that there's any connotation here whatsoever, and there certainly shouldn't be in anyone's mind that the governor threw in the towel. I think that he has done a responsible job and the legislature's responding responsibly. Further, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to mention that virtually everything you see here for Anchorage follows municipal priorities and the governance priorities and the Anchorage School District priorities, and that we have worked as a delegation of Anchorage senators. We've worked very closely with the House of Representatives members from Anchorage in developing the projects that are being put in this budget, and I just want to thank everyone for their cooperation. And thirdly, Mr. Chairman, I make probably the least major amendment here. I'd like to move on page 7, lines 22 and 23. In the item referring to dormitory housing, after the word Anchorage, delete the word dormitory and insert "and Anchorage Community College student," so that the description would read "University of Alaska Anchorage and Anchorage Community College student housing." I'm sure this matters to no one except for some of us in Anchorage.
Motion before the committee. All in favor? Carried.
Thank you.
It took me a little time to count that one. Any other amendments, motions? Senator Bates?
Okay, I'd like to begin my remarks. I think my colleague from Anchorage is going to be appalled that I say this, but I think it needs to be said anyway. The person who deserves the credit, the initial credit for getting the Anchorage delegation together, is Senator Fisher, and I think that recognition should be made. He started early on. His staff member, John, beat us all over the heads to get our projects together. He even had all the senators together in the same room on several occasions, so I think Senator Fisher does deserve some acclaim there. All right, I hope everybody will be patient with me. I have a lot of dropping ads here. Let's start with page 3. Under development, between lines 8 and 9 would be fine. Add the Alaska Zoo. For $125,000.
Was that $375,000?
$125,000.
$125,000.
Then on page 3, under the transportation section, we're going to be adding anywhere after line 3 under Central Region Highways, Wilderness Drive for $100,000. Jewel Lake Road, Jewel Lake Road rehab for $1,472,000. and limited road service areas improvement. Limited road service areas improvements. $800,000. And on line 7, where it says Prospect Drive paving, decrease $540,000 to $140,000. On page 8, do I have to do these each separately and ask for a motion for each one of these? Thank you. On page 8, delete lines 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20. The reason I'm deleting those, Mr. Chairman, is they're primary recreational projects. They were repaving hockey rinks, doing things to the elementary schools, particularly in South Anchorage, that from the research I've been able to find do not meet the governor's criteria at this time or the criteria that the Senate senators had agreed to. So I'm deleting those recreational projects at this time. On page 10, delete lines 5 and 6. For the same reasons, those are recreational projects and did not seem to meet the criteria that we had established as a group at this time. And I have just a couple more. On page 10, line 23, the Lazy Mountain Fire Station, please increase that amount to $400,000.
Taking a total of $400,000?
Yes, sir. A total of $400,000. And one last one on page 13. After line 15, add Anchorage traffic improvements for $769,000. Yes, sir. On page 13. After line 15, add Anchorage traffic improvements for $769,000. And one last change, Mr. Chairman, on line 15 on page 13, Anchorage, where it says Raspberry Road walk path, decrease 212 to 106, $106,000. And I'll kill myself if I've forgotten something. That's it, Mr. Chairman.
Motion before the committee to adopt the changes as indicated by Senator Fakes. All in favor? Motion carried. Senator Victor Hershey.
Mr. Chairman, I assume, Mr. Chairman, that legislative finance will take care of shifting any necessary items from one category to another if they're more appropriately municipal grants rather than DOT projects and so on.
I wouldn't attempt to do anything with the powers of the body. Senator Mulcahy?
Mr. Chairman, I've got a couple of changes here. I had one from Senator Eliason. On page 11, line 11, reduce the put over Boat Harbor. There's been a duplication of funding here, Mr. Chairman, from the $2,050,000 to $1,238.6. $1,238.6. And then go to page 5, between lines 13 and 14, that would be in the southeastern regional highways, and insert the Heidelberg to Craig Road Project Construction, ED 2, for $811,400.
I think we better throw that number again.
Yeah. $811,400.
$400, thank you. 811.4.
I'd move that amendment.
Then it's before the committee, all in favor? Carried.
And, Mr. Chairman, in my own district, I would go to page 10, line 12, to the Kodiak Island Borough Sewer and Water Project Phase Number 2, and increase that figure from 1.725 to 2.125. The increase is like $400,000, Mr. Chairman. And the deletion on that, Mr. Chairman, dropped out somewhere between yesterday afternoon and this morning. It was in there. What it was a Mel Bay Road project that was duplicated and just didn't show up on the bill before us. And I'd like to make a technical amendment on page 14. Again, under it's page 14, line 13, and under the Kodiak Island Borough, it says Lily Drive and Woody. It should be Woody rather than Woodway. I would move the amendments.
The amendments proposed by Senator Mulcahy are before the committee. All in favor? Carried. We have one more. Mr. Pasek, why don't you read this particular amendment? Senator Reyes?
Yeah, we have two, well, actually three changes. On page 13, line 9, delete that project and delete the project on page 11, line 13.
Okay. These were from Senator Wright.
From Senator Wright. And he would like those monies then transferred to the project on page 13, line 7. And that will be amended to read area-wide street, sidewalk, and parking construction repair and maintenance. And the figure will then be $4,040,000.
Okay. I so move the amendment. All in favor? Amendment carries. Any member of the committee have anything further? Senator Ferguson?
Mr. Chairman, move that we recommend substitute for Senate Bill number 162, final amendment.
Motion before
the individual recommendation.
Motion before the committee.
Mr. Chairman, can I get that clarified that there's going to be a committee substitute that includes the amendments?
Yes, the Finance Committee substitute, including all the amendments, and the staff will start on it immediately. All in favor of the motion? Bill moved out. Individual recommendations. I might add to the members, any technical adjustments can still be made. Contact our office. We would like to move this out as soon as possible and into the floor of the Senate and to the House to get these projects on the street. It's imperative that if this is going to be a timely and meaningful appropriation, those jobs have to be out there very early this spring. So I would ask that any technical amendments, anything of that nature, expeditiously get it to us. Anything further to come before the committee? Peter McDowell for Governor's OMB.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. If I may, direct your attention to our charts. These are out convenient place for everyone.
Closer, if you could.
The charts are duplicated in your handout material, these first charts. And the subject of the presentation is revenue expectations. As we've had a little more time to analyze the fiscal affairs of the state, it's become very apparent that many people in the state of Alaska are probably still living with revenue expectations that are unrealistic. So we've tried to commence a program of information to discuss the current situation with the overall state's revenue. Now, this is the revenue forecast that were made. The white line is the revenue forecast that was made a little over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, with regard to unrestricted general fund revenue for the state of Alaska. As you'll notice, the estimate for 1984 was about $4.5 billion, and the estimates for the next few years, 85, 86, 87, were moving very quickly between to the $6 to $7 billion per year range. So during last year's campaigning, during last year's discussions, during last year's planning as far as the public and the rest of us in the state of Alaska were concerned, things looked very rosy with regard to oil revenues. In December of 1982, a new forecast was prepared that represents the Department of Revenue's best estimates over the next 10 years, of revenue expectations based upon current levels of oil prices, world oil prices. And you'll notice that these are down below at least a third off of the year-old expectations, and in many cases, quite a bit more. These are nominal dollars, incidentally, not purchasing power or real dollars. Morning, Senator.
Morning.
The third line is the spending limit. The spending limit, which was designed and passed in a year when revenue expectations were at this level. Well, the spending limit is, in fact, as far as we can determine, irrelevant and will be for the next decade. As defined in the constitutional amendment, it is, in fact, several hundred million dollars over any realistic expectations of revenue available for those purposes in the near future. The second chart gives us a historical perspective. Why do we have, or why have we had expectations at those levels? Well, partly that since 1970, there's been an increasing sources of revenue available, and the green curve, in this case, is total capital and operating funds available for appropriation by year. Just in the very recent past, in 1980, those were only about $1 billion. In 1981 and 1982, they soared to around $5 billion. And that's the recent past and the history that we're all living with. We, in fact, have seen terrific increases in the revenue curve just in the last couple of years through a variety of factors. These increases are not expected, as is obvious for the future 10-year trend, to continue. Nominal dollars, this year's 1984's number is anticipated to be under $3 billion. It's not expected to hit $3 billion until 88, and in fact, once we hit the turn of the decade around 1990, the nominal receipts from general fund revenue sources presently in law are expected to drop off very rapidly. The blue line in this case is in fact merely a trended estimate of what would happen to the operating budget if it were trended at roughly a 6% compound annual increase from 1983 forward. And in fact, it means that the difference between the two is the funds available for capital budget and loans. And in 1990, 1991 approximately, that difference goes to zero. So within the very not too distant future, if we were not to change management of the operating budget, we could expect the operating budget to capture all of the revenue sources available to the state. The next chart is just to display the fact that there is another source of income, major source of income to the state, as hoped, I believe, by many of the people that supported the permanent fund in the past. It is and will become a significant source of revenue for the state of Alaska. Under present law, that is, assuming reinvestment of 50% of earnings each year and growth of principal through normal normal inflows of royalties and other dedicated revenues, it is estimated that the permanent fund by 1988 will income will approach $600 million a year, and by 1994 it will approach almost $1 billion a year. These are assuming that there is a 10% yield on investments each year on average, and that half of that is reinvested in principal and utilized as a base scenario for the following years. This is, again, significant compared to the under $3 billion numbers that we're seeing from other sources of unrestricted revenues. And, in fact, the next to last chart displays the percentage of those permanent fund earnings, and this is a conservative forecast, as a percentage of total revenue available. So, in 1984, in fact, permanent fund earnings are estimated to be at least 15% of total revenue available to the state. And in 1994, that's expected to rise to at least 25% of total revenues available. So, again, this is a relatively new source of revenue, but it's the most significant new source. Some of the estimates I've seen, for example, that assume reimposition of the personal income tax, don't make contributions to the state's income at anywhere near these levels. So out of the alternatives available to us, permanent fund earnings is probably number one in terms of relative magnitude to oil revenues. One final graph. This is per capita appropriations in nominal dollar terms from statehood through 1994-1995. The trend was very flat in the 60s, gradually increasing in the 70s, with the first significant rise in the late 70s, and then a tremendous spike up to almost $12,000 per capita in 1981-1982, and dropping then rapidly back down to the just a bit above the late 70 levels in 1984, or next year, the year we're coming up to. So again, expectations are probably being driven by recent history. Reality is not. Reality is history that is more reflective of history a few years back. The exhibits that I've handed out include, for each of these charts, which are all in nominal dollars, the ones we actually spend, a second chart of the same information in real dollars. Real dollars in 1983 dollars, and the assumption underlying those was assuming an average compound inflation rate of 6% to deflate those dollars to purchasing power. So if inflation in the future averages around 6%, those second set of charts will represent the 1983 purchasing power of the state's resources, and those declines are rather dramatic. In one last page, the very last page in the handout is not represented on a chart, but it does include price assumptions that are being utilized in the current revenue forecasts. And I might just take you through a couple of these. These are price assumptions for the Saudi OPEC marker crude, the one that's publicized, the number that's publicized most often. For the calendar year 1983, the March assumption in the Department of Revenue forecast is for a marker price of about $26.50. The posted price of marker crude as of last week's OPEC agreement is approximately $29.50. The spot market price for smaller quantities of that oil is $27.50. So we are, at this moment, safe with regard to our forecasts as opposed to reality in the market. As you can see, the present forecast, which is going to be redone starting this week by the Department of Revenue, shows a gradual decline in dollars per barrel of marker crude as an assumption for producing longer range revenue forecasts. Now that's the balance of the original presentation on revenue expectations. The second portion of our presentation was given by Attorney General Gorsuch, who I'm sorry to report is unable to join us this morning. He's in Bartlett Hospital recovering from some injuries that he received yesterday at Eagle Crest. So I will, if there's no objection, go through his presentation briefly. I'm afraid I'm not as articulate on the subject as he is, but if there's no objection from the chairman of the committee, I'd like to go ahead and proceed.
Just a moment. Would it bother you if one asked a couple of questions about the charts before we leave?
Whatever your preference.
If you could put the second chart up, please. Have any analyses been made of the composition of the changes in the operating budget in 81-82 to determine sort of where we would be if we were able to cancel those particular changes? Because essentially the green lines and the blue lines coincide until we get to 80, and then we go out of sight with the expenditure line.
Minimal capital budgets, essentially, right to 1980. This, incidentally, just for historical perspective, this gap right here is the 900 million. That's how this difference was paid for. The analysis that we've done is a partial analysis to date. We're going back, we're trending backwards by programs. We've noticed that nearly all of the programs show a curve just about like this one. There isn't much difference. The revenue spike was applied in a relatively even-handed manner to existing programs, and then there were, of course, a number of additions, funding programs that did not exist as far as the state budget was concerned. But that I can just give you a general response, Senator, at this time. We're not through looking at the history. But all of those in existence then pretty much show this pattern, this percentage increase pattern of, well, this thing, what they were, operating or capital, but that kind of a spike. And then new ones, a lot of new ones were added as well, which were zero back in this period.
Mr. Chairman, will your analysis be completed soon enough to assist us in this year's budget process?
We will provide as much of it as we have. We were discussing just some of it this morning. We've taken about 10 major programs, so-called entitlement programs, such as the Public School Foundation program. That one, for example, went up by about 100% in that time frame, just as an example of some of the increases. And public school bond debt retirement, municipal public school bond debt retirement, $20 million, $60 million between here and here. So there's a lot of this. There's doubling, sometimes trebling, in programs that were in existence, and then, of course, creation of a number of new ones.
I just have two quick ones. Was the permanent fund earnings chart based on inflation proofing or not?
It's based on present law, and we assume that, in fact, the amount required to inflation-proof against whatever index is chosen is equal to the 50% of income for that. So this assumes a 50% of income reinvestment every year.
One last question. When will the Department of Revenue have the new forecast?
Tom, would you share that?
The price assumptions that drive the model will be determined tomorrow. And around Thursday or Friday, the new forecast will be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming, going back to the first chart you had in front of you there, Peter, that with the available funds that, no, the high peak one.
Oh, right, available for appropriations.
Appropriation.
Right.
That in that great jump that we're showing there and illustrating there, 900 million and 1.3 billion of that went right into the permanent fund. So in reality, if, you know, the way you present it and the way we look at it, the way the public looks at it probably, it kind of assumes that government spent all that money, when in fact, a good part of that was moved right over and in fact doubled the capital that's in the permanent fund. So if you put another color in there and showed what part of that went into the permanent fund, it'd give a more realistic picture of what was spent and what was saved.
Right, your spike would come, it takes about this, right there is a couple of billion under that curve, so you just cut it off right here and say that much has been saved. And in fact, is half the reason for the permanent fund income forecast that we show on the other chart. No, absolutely, appropriations, I should say all, capital budget, operating budget, savings in the permanent fund, or any other category that I've excluded from that. That's an excellent point. So we have we had the ability, and the interesting thing, of course, is that the state had the ability to do it, took advantage of that ability, and probably is losing the ability to do that again, depending on how the operating budget trend, whether it resembles this or this, and then, of course, what happens in the capital budgets.
Because I think in those 2 years, as I recall, and off the top of my head, that basically what the legislature did was appropriate to the permanent fund what was anticipated as about a third of the available capital for that year. And it didn't materialize every time, but with the 900 million and certainly with the 1.8 billion was roughly about a third of the 6 billion that was projected.
Yeah, it was about, if 81 was 5 billion approximately, about a billion of that was put in. And then if 82 was 5 billion plus as well, about a billion of that went in. And then, in fact, if the rest goes in, it will still be coming out of this so-called, this what you might call a surplus that was accrued during those couple of years. It's just 2 years. That number, those numbers, we haven't had anything that was within a third of what we're looking at now, of around 3 billion a year for the next 4 or 5 years, or but perhaps 10. Yeah, thank you very much for bringing that point out, because it's an important.
Sir, could you help?
Another thing is we paid off a contractual debt advance, about 300 million. It won't be reoccurring. You expect that slightly. And of course, although it's capital, some of the obligations were just a 1 year and not reoccurring type of capital, like 168, which offset the payment of contract in advance type.
Right, and there's another level of investment as well, which we have, no one's dwelled on to any great extent, but I think it's an important one, and that is the loan programs. Even though the state makes a large volume of subsidized loans, it does in fact earn back the nominal principal and at least some yield on those loans. So investment, or call it investment for investment's sake, in permanent fund principal and in loan programs. Permanent fund principal has been added 2 billion, and in loan programs, I'm not certain of the number, but it's over a billion, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. So there is another layer of investment out there that does generate certain levels of returns and future available revenues, call them what you will. But there is another layer of investment that's been made primarily in out of this revenue chunk, the revenue spike. And that's there. If you eventually ever liquidate them, then of course could represent additional sources of capital for state operating or capital budgets. But it's not an immediate source. Those are pretty much long-term investments that remain in both sides, both the permanent fund and in the loan programs.
One, if I might, Peter, one interesting graph that would probably reflect on that very dramatically would be what has been the growth of government parallel level. How much money has been spent year by year on the operating budget, and see how that spikes right along.
Well, the biggest jump is right there, 80 to 82.
Do you have your loan programs in there? And
The loan appropriations are in the gap here, in the capital portion. Capital and loans operating, including debt service, capital and loans essentially in the remainder between the blue and the green lines.
Any other questions?
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chairman, and again, I apologize for the absence of my colleague, but he would be here if he were able. On Saturday a week ago, the Cabinet met in a work session to consider a number of issues. One of those was responses to revenue declines. So whether we see a flat revenue curve in nominal terms or a real declining curve in real terms, we have declines. We have had a decline from 83 to 84, and, well, from 82 to 83, another decline from 83 to 84, and further declines forecast for the next 5 to 10 years. The group that dealt with this subject of responses to these declines came back and said, well, and there are a number of issues. Cost containment is one. Recognition of government's fundamental role is another. And I'll just take you through their analysis. The analysis began with basic functions of government. If you had to, what would you cut back to? Promotion and protection of health, welfare, and safety came out first. Producing revenue from state-generated taxes and sale of resources, etc., privately generated from between the private sector, business, and personal income came out next. The state has a myriad of statutory and regulatory responsibilities that have to be maintained and considered when you're cutting down and cutting back as to what it is fundamentally important. And the state has a large pool of resources to accomplish its primary objectives. No one is saying that the apocalypse is here. The issue is its expectations have got to be lowered to reality, but reality is still pretty good. It's pretty nice and a lot better off than many other people. I believe it. I've been reading some of the literature coming out of other states, and this kind of a program or these kind of thoughts are way above any level that those people are considering in many other parts of the nation. The program, however, requires cost containment, requires that basic needs be considered and funded before there are any more expansions of programs or in additions of new programs. It requires that efficiency of government is encouraged and caused by inter- and intra-agency realignments. There are redundancies built into our state government, some of which are very important for the protection of the political process, others of which merely create waste, and they need to be looked at very carefully. Management has to prioritize its programs and activities within the available resources. There are no longer the choice of if we want it and we don't do it now, let's add it. That will always be, henceforth, for the next few years, a substitution process. So you must lay down priorities. We must, I should say, together. One of the considerations is when constituents come forward and asking them to don't automatically think program additions from state budgets, go back and talk about other alternatives. Figure out how to match things with private funding. Go through all those exercises first. And one of the obligations of everyone in government is to help people realize this. Help people do it. If people need technical support, give it to them. It will help in the long run. Encourage groups of constituents to band together and review their common problems. The state, the people of the state, and the government as well are broken into very small units, each separately funded. The time that we have the luxury of doing that is over. The small groups need to be brought together, people need to band together, consider their common problems, and benefit from economies of scale that are available to you if you get together in larger groups. Do a much better job of futures planning with interagency coordination. In other words, every agency, every part of state government is strongly impacted by external forces beyond their control. We must know what those are. Futures planning is relatively well developed at this stage in the United States, and there's absolutely no reason for any major surprises coming down the pike. We should not have been surprised, and probably weren't, but we could have been even less surprised at the population growth in Anchorage in the last 2 or 3 years. If you stopped and thought about it and planned it, you could see it coming. A lot of other surprises that are avoidable. And if they are avoided, you will have a plan that allows you to react with those changes rather than one that is pure reaction without knowledge. Very important to use candor in dealing with the public. There's no reason to not be as realistic as possible with every public audience, every individual person that's not a member of the government with regard to the limitations of revenue on state spending, budgetary constraints, local efforts increases that are required, share the burden philosophy of dealing with a picture like this. One of the suggestions from the group was interagency strike forces. Now, I'm not sure where that terminology came from. I did not invent it. No pride of authorship. But it's a way of saying that if you band together as a team and take the talents that are available in government right now without calling in and spending for more, you can solve a lot of problems. And believe me, this is a major tenet of the Sheffield administration, is that there are a lot of problems that can be addressed by the people we have. Alaska has invested, has made a terrific investment in people and talent, and probably doesn't have to look outside for a lot more right now to do that. But you have to have mechanisms to cause it to happen. The task forces that have been utilized during the early months of this administration are one. This is a matter of internalizing those task forces to a certain extent. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch or a tanstoffel in terminology of the group that worked this up. It's just a point that has to be remembered by all of us, and it's a message that has to go out and to all of the state from now on, because there aren't, if there ever was one, there in the past, it was only in those couple of years, and there won't be any in the future. Budgetary reform is required, and there's a name for the process of asking the fundamental questions, and that is zero-based budgeting. But that term doesn't have any meaning on its own. It's a thought. It describes a thought process, and it's important. We will stop the process from driving the system. Right now, we have a process called continuation budgeting, and it's better known as perpetual increase budgeting. Pick a name, and that's what it means. That process is out of existence as of now. It will be replaced by one that involves asking fundamental questions. Why was a program started? You need to know the history. And you need to know such things as the history of how it's been funded. You need to ask, is it doing the job intended? What is the job? First, we often don't know that. We've looked at a lot of the operating budget already, and in every single case, on the pages that are called objectives, they are in fact only statements of activities. So we don't know this in most cases in government programs. We don't know why. We do know what, but we know what the job is, but we don't know for sure if it's the job that was intended. Can it be managed better? One of the proposals that came out of the group is that there be what amounts to sunset provisions that requires that every single program in government is reviewed at minimum every 5 years. So that in a 5-year cycle, you will have gone through them all, because we don't probably want to spend the resources necessary to go through them all every year, but we'll take a crack at it for the 85 budget to get as close as we can. Contingency planning. I mean, not only do we have an expectation gap, but we've got another problem coming up, and that is we must plan for contingencies, because there's nothing right now in the volatile world oil economy that is going to prevent another $5 or even $10 price decline from OPEC. And believe me, I lived a couple of years in Nigeria, which has become one of the major players in this country, and they will not survive on 600,000 or 700,000 barrels a day. They've got to have 2 million. Everything they do down there is based on 2 million barrels a day, and they will probably cut their price to get it, or get somewhere near that level of revenue. So we must think of contingencies if driven for no other reason by what could happen to our revenues. Again, we talk about the futures program. We need better forward planning for crises and opportunities that could be in the form of socioeconomic crisis or opportunity, actual disasters of other nature, just other than just revenue disasters, natural ones as well, and the unforeseen consequences of a decision. A lot of decisions made in the public sector have exactly these. And we've worked together on this to a certain extent this session, and we're hoping that during the interim and next session we'll all be able to work on it to a much greater extent so we reduce the quantity of these things and their impact. One of the things that we'll be doing is that in the agencies there will be working with our Division of Strategic Planning in OMB to think through the strategic implications of projections that come out of the futures program for each of the agencies and their major programs. Another technique is to learn from the past. Talk about dramatic and crisis events. The Trans-Alaska Pipeline, ANCSA, ANILCA, the 1964 earthquake, all of those are things that can be looked at. They're pretty well documented because they occurred in recent times, and we need to look back at those and say, well, there are more of these coming. These are not unique. These were unique events, but their nature and their size are not unique. There will be more. So the state must have contingency plans in place that deal with things of this magnitude as well as smaller events. Another one of the options, looking at the history or the Brookings Institute think tanks. Finally, and Norm does this much better than I do, because I think he was the major contributor to the group that worked this out, is to never forget, in fact, put paramount the human and political factors. Recognize that political factors affect delivery costs, that the state has a social obligation to serve, and in fact has a social obligation to serve in certain ways that don't necessarily result in maximum efficiency or minimum costs. And this, I think he might have directed this to me as much as anybody else in the cabinet that day, but I listened. The bottom line versus the external societal forces must be considered every time a decision is made. All of this material has got to be dealt with in this context. You can't just do that without keeping external society in Alaska in mind. And his last message was, trust the people. If you give the people of Alaska enough information, they will, as always in the past, do the right thing by all of us. So that was the final message from Norm, is that when you deal with cost containment, revenue declines, or contingency plannings, you take it to the people, provide the people of Alaska with as much information as possible, and listen to what they say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good. I have about four questions I'd like to ask if you have time for. One, in Governor Sheffield's January 24th briefing packet on FY84 budget, permanent fund earnings were projected to be $404 million. More recent revenue estimates placed the number at $458 million. What is OMB's estimation of total permanent fund earnings available for appropriation now? Is this...
Tom, are you current on that? And we have not, as of yet, updated our total forecast to a new number for the permanent fund. We're still dealing in the low 400 millions for 1984.
So low 400. Okay. In FY 83 and 84, what amount of money will be needed to inflation-proof the permanent fund? Do we have this yet?
Well, that the subject of, well, the question arises that under current law, it's stated that reinvestment of enough to compensate for an index. It's not specific about the index. The Board of Trustees of the Permanent Fund Corporation is in fact in the process of developing a recommendation, which as far as I understand the law, they can accept about an inflation index to measure. And I believe they're considering right now probably as number one candidate, the Anchorage CPI, the Anchorage Consumer Price Index. That is also, of course, under consideration by a number of people and has the index for measuring changes in the spending limit. with regard to inflation. So it hasn't been finalized at this stage, and then you have to pick, of course, the time period you're going to utilize. Is it the current year? Is it last year, fiscal calendar, et cetera? And that'll make a difference on a year-to-year basis, but it won't have much effect on average. And on average, I think they're expecting that, say, for the next 5 to 10 years, or perhaps even the next 20, that if the country has an average inflation of 5%, or the anchor CPI inflates around 5%, then there's a chance that half of current incomes, if they can earn 10, which is a 5% real rate of return, will cover that particular index. So that's just wide open, as I understand it at this time. There's a lot of discussions going on.
Another question. In the governor's FY84 operating budget, $80 million has been reserved for special and supplemental appropriation. It's my understanding that this money will be used to cover pay raises, new legislation, and FY84 supplementals. Will the $80 million be adequate to cover these projects? Do you still feel that that's a realistic number?
Well, we have to. It depends on how we manage during this fiscal year. And it's briefly, 80 probably should be. The salary increases, we don't know what they are. This year, the estimate for the rest of the fiscal year is certainly covered in that amount. If there's another Union Oil Marathon case, there's half of it right then and there. Depends on what comes forward, but as an amount based on recent history, it seemed to be reasonable at the time, and we've got no reason to doubt at this point that it's not reasonable still. But it's a balance. It's at least the minimum fund balance that probably needs to be carried forward in the general fund. We're considering recommendations right now that for later this week that balance, minimum balance, perhaps should even be greater because of the uncertainty and volatility with regard to oil prices in fiscal year 1984. So we may recommend that number, in fact, that the bogey for that be even higher in 84. That, of course, assuming revenue forecasts are accurate, means that some other appropriations will have to be less. Appropriations to be made this session.
So are you going to have a refinement of that figure on the Friday meeting or Thursday meeting?
Yes.
The reason I'm asking is that from Department of Revenue came a figure of $153 million for supplementals. That goes all the way down to 40. And by Friday, I hope we will have a refined estimate.
By Wednesday, in fact.
By Wednesday.
We plan to have a revised estimate and a clear statement of what we believe is probably the minimum that should be held aside free from any appropriation at this time out of projected sources of revenue.
Are you in that analysis taking funds from, say, interagency receipts that automatically would have lapsed? Or is that changing your lapse figure?
Well, we're estimating a net lapse, and we've estimated a net lapse in both fiscal years from the operating budget all budgets of $40 million.
Okay.
And that's unchanged at this time.
Okay, you're not changing that then.
But we're still considering that we may want to make a different recommendation again on Wednesday.
Okay.
One last question, if I might, Peter. In January, OMB estimated that FY84 spending ceiling was $2.98 billion. That number was based on inflation population growth of 8.4. That projection now seems a little bit high. Is OMB's growth rate for FY84 still 8.4? If not, what is the new figure?
The 8.4 was in fact the recommendation that we received and accepted contingently at that time from the prior administration. That was a combined percentage change in prices, in inflation, and population. The recommendation that we've made to date internally to define the measures of population and inflation to be used in the spending limit over the long run, again, it's not applicable to any one year, but to all years, is we're considering at the moment our best recommendation at present is the Anchorage CPI plus the State Department of Labor's estimate of population increase. The old figures were in fact based upon, I think it was the national CPI from some time period back, and the average percentage increase in population in the state between 1970 and 1980. But our conclusions today are that those were not the intended measurements, that the intended measurements in 1982 when the vote took place were in fact the Anchorage CPI as the best indicator of inflation felt by the people of Alaska, and actual population changes. And as I think you all know, at least those of you from Anchorage know, that the population changes in Anchorage and in the state of Alaska have been dramatic in the last couple, 3 years. Much higher in the early 80s than they were in the late 70s, percentage increases per year. That yields a spending limitation of fiscal 1984 of about $3.4 billion, or for over $400 million higher than that original forecast. So that the issue then is, what is the proper definition? And that's an issue that has to be taken, should be taken separately, because it's a longer term issue. What did the people of Alaska intend to mean by inflation and population? And that's the recommendations at this point. And then apply those, agree on them, apply them, and use them from as long as that spending limit is in existence. So, but almost by either calculation or anyone in between, the spending limits, in fact, is the revenues. Because there, as one of the charts shows, there is almost no hope whatsoever that there will be a year in the near future with revenues in excess of the limit. So the limit, presumably, will not come into effect. The limit as defined. But we do believe that separately that the best definitions are probably going to be the CPI and the actual population measured by the state department of labor. But that's the change that it would affect.
Is the administration considering changing any of the oil taxes or instituting any new taxes on the citizens of the state at this time?
Not under any discussions that I'm privy to at this time, but obviously, how do you respond? And one of the responses, of course, is on the revenue side. It isn't all just cost. I think that that's got to be the subject of some pretty impressive public debate over the next couple of years concerning either imposition or reimposition of some other kinds of taxes, perhaps.
Senator Fisher?
Mr. Chairman. Peter, what changes in the previously submitted budget can we expect in what, both capital and operating?
The operating budget is amended. As amended, will be presented on Wednesday, this Wednesday, 2 days. And I can give you an indication of the nature of the changes that have been proposed. They represent. One is the salary increase for the fiscal year 1984 based on the negotiated contracts. That, in fact, is about $32 million. And I'm not an expert on collective bargaining, but I understand that's one that's there, essentially is there. That's an increase over the budget presented in January, because that's a number that's now known that in fact, wasn't fully developed at that time. And as I also understand, it's always been dealt with it's been dealt with as a separate appropriation, and that's in fact how we're dealing with it. We have not allocated it to the departments at this point in time. It's a single number. The proposed Department of Corrections is showing significant requested increases. Basically, to get new facilities online as close to July 1, 1983 as possible, to handle the overload presently in existing facilities, and to upgrade security in a number of other institutions and meet some of the provisions of the lawsuits that are presently underway and will settle piece by piece. Other increases, there's a significant increase proposed in the public school foundation program and municipal public school bond debt service. They're significant to the total increase. They're pretty insignificant as far as those programs are concerned. As you're well aware, I think for the The total of those two for fiscal year 1983 with the supplementals will be in the area of $475 million already. So increase on that isn't much of a percentage increase, but it's a lot of dollars. We recognize the fact that there will be, at least the fact that there will be more pupils next year. Our demographics are driving that formula to a significant extent right now, the growth we've had in recent years. I'm trying to think of other areas that there's...
DNR, fish and game.
Natural resources and, well, two things that show up as accounting changes in both natural resources and fish and game. We have proposed to move the operating activities funded in the past under the capital budget to the operating budget. So that'll show up as an increase to the operating budget, but not an increase to the total budgets. There, in fact, have been there. It's about $14 million in the fiscal year 1984. That'll just be shifted from one to the other to clean up the accountability of what is operating and what is capital. There are a couple of other increases that have been recommended for both those departments. Significant, but not huge increases. And
some programs at Health and Social Services.
Some, yes. Health and Social Services, we're proposing increases there, none of which relate to administrative burden or overhead, all of which relate to direct service delivery. The biggest one, a chunk of that, is an increase, proposed increase in catastrophic illness. I guess we call it insurance, but support. But certain other increases that we hope will directly impact the public being served, as opposed to causing more.
We propose prevailing reductions